for help. They have more free time. A lot more people aren't working. So what are they doing? A lot of them are reading. A lot of them are picking up technological skills. A lot of them are at the library for help on finding jobs and workforce development kind of things, the state workforce development. Sometimes are based out of libraries. And certainly when the workforce development programs are online and you have to send in information to the state by computer, many people, the only access to that computers that they have is going to the library. And the library, as I said, the library services are being taxed beyond. But we haven't heard everything yet, and so today's meeting is for public testimony, and whoever wants to talk can. But I would like to tell everyone that the members had an assignment, and the members were supposed to outreach in their communities and talk to their somebody in local library services to help so that we can have factual basis or anecdotal basis for our discussion as we go along today. And so thanks a lot for coming, and we will start this morning with Tori Jensen, president of the Minnesota Educational Media Organization.
Is this where I'm supposed to be?
Yes.
Thank you. I've never done this before. I'm sorry, didn't expect to go first. My name is Tori Jensen. I'm the Spring Lake Park High School librarian, media specialist, and president of the MEMO organization. That's the media specialist organization in Minnesota. I came to talk today about the state of school libraries and in relation to how that works with the multi-types, how we work with the multi-types or they work with us. Maybe as you know, we're losing media specialists. Quite a few media specialists retire and are not replaced, or they retire and they're replaced with someone with greatly reduced hours, or their hours are reduced to maybe 2 hours a week, or maybe even 2 hours a week for an entire district. This is especially true for our rural area school libraries. We're hurting. I myself have only been a school librarian teacher for 12 years. I have worked now in 3 different school districts, not because I chose to get a new job. Just as soon as I establish my curriculum and really get kids and students understanding some information literacy skills and tools to have in their box, I have to move on to a new district and watch my old library go down the drain. I happen to know that students in the North St. Paul School District are coming to the middle school not knowing how to use the school library catalog to find materials. I know this because of a friend that's still working there. They are down to 3 media specialists for 14 schools. I could go on and on. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about this. Freshmen, therefore, are leaving our high schools. Students are leaving our high schools, going into colleges as freshmen, and they're reporting to us at the college level that our freshmen, at best, 20% have the tools they need to do college-level research. Public libraries are a nice added support to our school libraries, but they do not teach information literacy. They are not able to have the staff to help our students find the resources they need to do research. School librarians are integration specialists. We teach teachers and students how to use Web 2.0, how to use technology to integrate into teachers' lessons, to make students understand the skills they're going to need for the jobs that haven't even been created yet. Our multi-types have been a huge help to us. Whereas some school libraries, well, many that I talk to, have a zero budget for books, databases, materials, and for lesson planning and curriculum, the multi-types have helped us to have developments such as MILLI, which is the Metronet Library's technology integration program. They come into our districts for free and train teachers along with their school librarian to use Web 2.0 tools to teach, integrate into their lessons. I actually work in a school district that is using the MILLI program now, and I never had such great collaborative efforts with teachers and integrating these Web 2.0 tools in lessons than before MILLI came. MILLI helped teachers to see the value of the school librarians in helping teach their students, our students. The multi-types have also brought us 23 things on a stick for all librarians in the state to learn what's out there on the internet for free for us to use. Have trained us how to use that with 23 things, the entire state. They've helped us to create professional learning networks, personal learning networks. I went to a program up in Alexandria last year that brought me all kinds of ways to get professional development from people that are working in my field right on my desktop computer. They have webinars that are free. They often have programs in different cities throughout the state that are free or for a very nominal cost, $20 maybe. And I think the most expensive one was $40. So when we have a zero budget and we can't get any professional development money from our districts, this is where we go. The multi-types have helped us to collaborate with all the types of libraries across the state. If we are going to do away with the multi-types, as the system stands right now, there will be no one to help us. Because public libraries are not, they can't fill that void. Each one of us, as probably as all of you know, collaboration is the big word these days. It's very difficult to collaborate because we're all in our little isolated places doing our jobs, so involved with our own jobs. The multi-types see the big picture, which is very difficult for me to see, and how we all fit together and how they can integrate us. I think that's what I had to say. Thank you very much for taking time to hear me today.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen. When you talk about you have a zero, the schools that you, many of the schools that you work with have zero budget for media kind of things. And that means, does that mean all technical things, or does that mean just the books and what is traditionally thought of as library services?
It means the schools may have computer labs that are up to date and working. That is usually not something that media specialists would be buying. I mean, that would be out of our, even if we had a budget, buying computers or a computer lab would be beyond our budget. Our budgets usually cover databases, which are probably anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 a piece for research. As you all know, everything is not free on the internet. Books and materials such as that, supplies. I know many media specialists that have to go to their principals to ask for paper, staples,
okay,
regular office supplies.
Thank you for that distinction. And then when the multi-system provides these services to you, they do not charge you. That's what you're saying. They have these opportunities for you to gain more knowledge or to collaborate with other people. They build up circumstances for you to meet with others in your field.
Yes.
And learn from them. And then that is done through their budget.
Yes.
Through the multi-system budget.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. All right. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Jensen, one of the comments that you made that concerns me is that 20% of freshmen entering colleges have the necessary tools to do proper research. Now, you know, I recall, you know, back ages ago when I was in, you know, ninth grade, that we had a classes on how to do that. You know, as a teacher, I know that in our middle school, our English department also brought students for a unit into the library to learn how to do this. Now, I'm wondering, isn't that being done across the state? I probably should know this. Perhaps, you know, Representative Carlson or others would know. Is there a standard on research skills that we have in our education standards for English? How can this be rectified?
Ms. Jensen.
The state library is currently collecting statistics, and they're currently researching the state of school libraries. They've been working on this for a couple of years, and I believe some people here will be talking about this. The national standards that are being developed, as I understand, and some of what I've seen so far, do list some of these information literacy skills as part of those standards. Who will teach them and how they will be taught, as far as I know, is not distinct. In my experience, I will use North St. Paul, as I was at those schools, the North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale schools, is the district 622. We developed a research curriculum, step, scope and sequence, and then they let 10 of 14 librarians go. And so even though they have the standards in place in the district and the curriculum in place, it is not being taught. It varies greatly from school to school, even within districts, if it's being taught and how it's being taught.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Paul Beckerman.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Paul Beckerman. I'm a high school library media specialist at Dassel-Cokato High School, a rural school of about 700 students in central Minnesota. I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. I will be sharing a high school library perspective regarding the recommendation to move funds and services from the current multi-type library system to the regional library systems. School libraries make up the vast majority of libraries serviced by multi-types. We're the largest group in that. Because of this, school libraries likely will be the type of library most impacted by any change that is made to the system. Therefore, I believe it's very important for school libraries to be well represented in this discussion. The Dassel-Cokato school system, where I am from, has been using multi-type library services for years, and we count on these services on a regular basis to offer quality education to our students. During the current economic downturn, we have seen funding become an even greater challenge than it has in the past, and that has made these library services more essential than ever to the success of our programs. These are services that we just can't afford to lose. I'd like to take a few minutes today to share with you some of the important services provided by multi-types to our schools. And for each service, I'll also suggest a question that I'd encourage you to consider as you're discussing this proposal. The first one is free delivery of books to our students. Our multi-type currently provides unlimited online ordering and free delivery of books to our libraries. This system is used regularly by our students, especially those that are college bound. Because deliveries come to the school, access is not restricted by public library hours. So if a student can't get to the public library, that's not an issue because they're in school or we are offering that service. And sometimes those library hours are restricted in rural areas. It allows us to provide a wide collection of written materials for our students, especially when diminishing budgets make it almost impossible for us to keep our local collections thorough and up to date. The question I would offer in this free delivery part is, will regional libraries be able to continue these services to schools free of charge? The second service is book checkout during visits to college libraries. Every college-bound English student at our school spends a day at St. Cloud State University, where our multi-type resides, researching for a large research paper. Our multi-type offers book checkout services to our students on site when we are there. This is a valuable part of our students' college preparation and something we count on to stress the importance of adding depth to students' understanding of their topics. The question here would be, would regional library systems be able to continue this checkout service for us, or would we need to give that up? Three, training and professional development, and Tori touched on this a little bit. Multi-types have offered frequent and valuable training opportunities through online seminars, so some I just do right at my desk at school, sessions at state library conferences, it might be the Memo Conference, it might be another conference that they are at, programs like the 23 Things on a Stick, which was an online self-paced program, and that was widely used by area media specialists. Personally, I've taken advantage of each of these types of training opportunities. The training has been critical for me in staying abreast of the ever-changing world of technology. It changes so fast that having an organization like CMLE there to help guide through the emerging technologies is very helpful. In addition, the training has often led to free online resources, which has helped me stretch my library dollars even further. The question here would be, would regional libraries be prepared to offer the same type of professional development that the multi-types are currently doing? The fourth service is a Destiny Consortium. Destiny is a library management system. The multi-types have been instrumental in helping to offer affordable access to the Destiny Library Management System through their consortium. Having access to this discounted group pricing is the only way many schools can afford this automated library system, and this has become essential in the modern library. The consortium has also offered training and support groups to assist schools with the system. Would regional libraries be able to continue that service? Purchasing discounts is the fifth one. Now CMLE, that's the Dassel-Cokato's multi-type organization, negotiates group discounts through many library vendors. This saves my school library hundreds of dollars every year because they can negotiate a group discount. Would regional libraries be able to continue that service? Communication. Multi-types do a great job of getting library information out to its constituents. They may use various means, including newsletters, blogs, websites, annual meetings, email distribution lists, and conference appearances. School libraries count on this communication network to stay connected with the other libraries. The question is, will regional libraries be prepared to continue this essential communication stream to keep all libraries connected? Networking. Multi-types are the link between the different library systems. That, in essence, is their purpose, to link us together. They are the multi-type. They provide forums for discussion, networks of communication, streams of information, broad-based resources, and relevant training. Because their purpose is to bring us all together and link our resources, it is fitting that they are neutral entities with no bias other than to connect libraries and services. I ask, would regional libraries be able to continue this unbiased networking among all library groups? And the eighth and final one that I'll just touch on today is representation on a library board. All library types are represented on multi-type boards. This is critical for school libraries since we are by far the largest library group in the state. If these services are transferred to the regional system, it's important that all library types continue to be represented on governing boards at that level. Will school libraries have a seat on regional library boards as they do on multi-type boards, or will they lose that voice? These are multi-type services that school libraries consistently rely on, and it's important that these services continue at no additional cost to schools. While I value and strongly support the public library system, I'm concerned that the regional libraries may not be the best places to put these multi-type services, and that regional libraries may not be able to adequately handle the challenge of serving hundreds of additional school libraries. Since the auditor's report on public libraries states that there would be no cost savings in moving these services to the regional systems, I have even stronger reservations about seeing an effective, efficient organization such as the current multi-type system restructured when it is already established and proven. At the very least, I feel more study needs to be done. Questions need to be asked and answered, and all stakeholders need to be represented. If restructuring our library system will improve our services and help student achievement, we should definitely consider it. However, if these changes lead to reduced services or increased costs for school libraries, then I believe this is a change that we cannot afford. Thank you again for careful consideration of these important issues, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Beckerman. In your school districts, or the Dassel-Cato, is that one school district?
And a very fine one.
Thank you, Representative.
Has that stayed level or on a plateau, or has it decreased?
I would say that we are more fortunate than most in our district, and we have been stable in that area. There haven't been significant increases. It's actually been pretty flat for the last 10 years or so. Before that, there had been kind of a steady addition each year to the library services because our district really values them strongly and feels that that adds to literacy skills and really prepares our students better. So we've probably put more money into the media services than some districts. I know there's a lot that have been cut, and we have not.
And in the school districts, major cuts that they've been forced to take in the last several bienniums, what voice has media services or library services had in the budget making process
in our district?
Yeah,
we have not really had a voice other than to approach our building principals and stress the importance of what we are doing. And I guess we haven't really been part of that discussion. Those are made more at the admin level. They do seek input at site team meetings and such, but that's the entire district. So they're each building, full building. So, you know, we have voice at those meetings, but no special voice.
Does, in your opinion, does library services, media services have as much voice as hockey?
We are more fortunate in our district, and I believe we are an academics first district. It's pretty rare to have a district where each school has a media specialist, and we do have that. Tori mentioned where, you know, 10 of 14 were cut in that district, and that's probably more the norm than ours. However, if we were to face further cuts, I know we're in line. You know, we're probably right up there on the list to lose somebody. The only way that we were able to maintain it this past probably 3 or 4 years is because our district passed a local levy. Before that levy was passed, we had the third least amount of per student funding in the state. Now I think we're right around the bottom 10%. So we moved up a little, but we're pretty efficient. And we have chosen to keep our media specialists because we really value the services.
Are you a growth area?
Slight, not tremendous. You know, if we maybe grow 30 kids a year, that would be it. Oh. District-wide.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Neither of the first two speakers mentioned the state librarian. Do they play any role in your work?
You know, the only contact that I personally have with the state librarian is through our multi-type. That's probably the only place I hear that name come up. Otherwise, you know, quite honestly, library media specialists are struggling just day-to-day to get the services to the students that we need. It's a very... I taught English for 18 years before moving into the library, and I sometimes long for the simplicity of my English teaching days because the library media job is huge, and there's so many hats to be worn. In fact, in our district, we are also the technology coordinators in our district, so we do all the computer ordering and planning and that type of visionary stuff. That doesn't happen in all districts. So I guess I haven't dealt with the state librarian, and maybe our dealings were more local, but I have had some information about that coming through multi-types. And again, that's where I see that multi-type being that tool to keep us informed on the different levels, because otherwise that's a different world to us on a day-to-day basis. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I see it.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Beckerman, thanks for coming. Mm-hmm. And I hear how much you value the services that you get. And change is difficult anywhere, but mm-hmm. everybody's dealing with tough budgets. A question I have, though, is if the services are maintained, mm-hmm. How important is it to even have a regional structure? Many of the services that you mentioned, I can see being delivered even on a statewide basis. I mean, I think the original formation of the multi-state or multi-type was so that a local high schooler could have access to the academic library or the library of another institution within their community. We've broken all of those barriers so that, you know, anyone in any part of the state can get a book or material, even if there's only one in a library somewhere in the state of Minnesota, you can get that delivered to your local library. And so what started as sort of a local sharing program has now sort of been replaced to some large degree by a statewide network of sharing resources, which has stretched everyone's materials acquisition budget at a time when that's, I think, critically needed. But some of the things that you mentioned, so that free access to that sharing, I think, is available to everyone, whether you're in school or not. But some of the things that you mentioned, like the online, you know, professional development, the courses, I mean, those seem to me things that could be done just as well at a statewide basis as a regional. And I'm trying to figure out what is geographically needed to service your school district that does need someone physically within so far of your system, or that needs to be that connected to the libraries, both academic and others, in your community.
Sure. And
Mr. Beckerman.
And as I sort of alluded to, you know, if we can find a system that continues all the services without additional cost to schools, and we have the same services that we're currently being given by multi-types, I'm not opposed to looking at other options. I'm just, my point, I guess, is that we have this multi-type organization in place, which has been offering really quality service to us, and we have been using it pretty integrally in our program. And, you know, I'm concerned that if this change is made, that we may lose some of those. It's a big shift to move all these school libraries under the regional umbrella without some study and some, you know, somebody there to make sure that the services continue. You know, I'm not sure I've seen, and maybe it's in person, I haven't seen it, but some sort of a migration plan where there would be somebody in charge of looking at each of those services that the multi-types offer, and then making sure that those are also integrated at the regional library. Because I know the regional libraries have book sharing services, certainly. We use the multi-type one because it's much more convenient for our students, because they can do it right at school. You know, being a rural community where there's farm kids and stuff like that, they don't always have a chance to get into the regional library, so it's just more convenient for us. That's probably why we've chosen to go that route. So I, you know, like I said, I'm not opposed to looking at other options. I just see that we have this really good system in place, at least for us in our community, through the multi-types, and I don't see a budgetary benefit to switch it. So I'm just concerned that we may lose something in the transition.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Beckerman, on the delivery of books and the interchanging of books, do the resources that are in your libraries go out?
They do not. They're probably too old anyway. But they do not, no. They come in.
And are they in the inventory, though, or are they in the data? No.
No, they're not.
Okay.
No, we go on to, what we do a lot is we go to the St. Cloud State Card Catalog, the library there, catalog, and the kids find books there. And then they use the Central Minnesota Library Exchange website to order those books online. And then they are shipped to our area so that we can get them.
Okay. So if I wanted to read once more one of my favorite books from ninth or 10th grade, January Thaw, and you had it on your shelves, I'd never be able to find that book anyway.
You would not see that as the system is currently set up.
What a shame.
You can come visit us, though. But no, you could probably find, you know, the college libraries are the ones that probably gets taxed the most from borrowing, and they have, you know, by far the biggest collections. I find that my book budget is being focused mostly on fiction. And we've seen a 23% increase in fiction reading this last year because we have been putting our money there. The kids have really wanted to read, and they want fresh new books. But we can't keep up in the nonfiction area. It changes so rapidly. In fact, the average age of a science technology book in my library is 1979. You know, it's just pretty useless. So for a student in a college-based class, especially if they're doing research on nuclear reactors or something like that, we don't want them to only go to online resources because it lacks a bit of the depth that you can get from the books. So we want them to have books and really encourage them to dig deeper. And the only way that we have right now is to order those through a sharing system like this.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate your organized memo also with the questions. Chris Olson, Metropolitan Library Services.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming.
Yes, As Representative Murphy stated, my name is Chris Olson. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Regional Library System, which is the regional library, public library system located here in the Twin Cities. Our organization serves the 105 public library outlets in the 7-county metro area. Today I want to talk about not the legislative auditor's report, but to tell you a good story about an important relationship that is taking place and taking root in our libraries in both the metro area but also statewide and even nationally. And I have to comment that Representative Murphy sort of set me up for this speech in her introduction, because this partnership that I'm interested in telling you about is about how people find jobs and start their small businesses with partnerships in public libraries. Public libraries have provided assistance to job seekers for more than 100 years. In the 21st century, the need for internet access and computers is more critical forever than ever. Our essential community institution is positioned to meet this growing need. It's your public library to help folks find jobs. Over the past decade, free access to computers and the internet in U.S. public libraries has evolved from being a rare commodity to being a core service. Nearly one-third of the U.S. population relies on public libraries for their internet access. Among job seekers, this percentage increases to more than 40%. Every day, Americans get job-seeking help at their local public library to seek employment, to apply for jobs, to find information on how to start a small business, or to register for information such as unemployment insurance. Now more than ever, Minnesotans' 300 public libraries are stepping into collaboration and will help fill the gaps and supplement services by organizations such as DEED, by Minnesota's 42 workforce centers, by counties and cities, the base community, and other community-based organizations working in this area. Only 30% of Minnesotans, job seekers, qualify for at least one of the 50 funding categories that will allow them to receive the full range of services provided by workforce centers. The other 70% are turning to their public libraries and other community agencies for help. As more and more employers and government services require only online registrations and applications, access for computer connections is critical for job seekers and the unemployed. A comparison of public library and workforce center resources in the metro area illustrate how libraries fill a tremendous gap in access. The metropolitan libraries are open more than 4,700 hours per week compared to the 576 hours per week at the 13 metro workforce centers. Libraries have 2,500 public access computers, and the workforce centers have 275. Metro area libraries schedule almost 2,000 technology training classes each year to help customers establish email accounts, apply for jobs, write resumes, write a business plan, and learn software applications. According to Workforce Center staff, the number of people that need employment services is larger than the Workforce Centers can handle. They consider public libraries a natural partner with more hours, more computers, and more technology training. In fact, the Federal Employment and Training Administration and the Federal Institute of Museum and Library Services are spearheading a new partnership to advance the goal of creating good jobs for everyone and helping Americans acquire those 21st century technology skills. State Library Services staff within the Minnesota Department of Education are also joining the efforts being undertaken by MELSA and other libraries in Minnesota. Within MELSA, a priority has been established. We will use part of our state funding, the Regional Library Basic System Support, to establish a baseline of services to assist any resident walking through our doors who are looking for a job or wish to start a small business. This means that public library staff must be at the table with all of our community partners. We need to provide cross-training to library and workforce center staff. We will provide leadership to bring together all of those who are willing agencies who are working on this goal. We will continue to provide basic training to individuals and offer referral assistance to those that need additional help. We will provide books, databases, and database access, and other materials to support this priority. We are excited about the work we've begun. We know that this is an important task in today's world, but we also understand that it is one that will probably not go away. Public libraries, as part of a community partnership, will be able and willing to strengthen Minnesota. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Olson, can you tell us a little bit more about the partnership and the financing of the partnerships?
Sure. Actually, the MELSA has those eight member library systems, which are the county libraries and the city of St. Paul. And about a year ago, we were talking about priorities and decided that this was a really important one for libraries to perform. And so we've gathered together representatives from each of those libraries to sort of sit down and, first of all, do a census of what actually is happening in each library. Ramsey County might say, oh, we're working in this area and with this workforce center. And Scott County might say, oh, I didn't realize we could work with Easter Seals. Tell us about that connection. And so communication has been really a core portion of our first task, and sort of finding out what exactly every library is doing. And again, in some libraries, the level of and the quality of services that are providing are very high. In other places, it's very low. And what we want to do, at least on the metro level, is to figure out a baseline to say, if you're looking for a job and you walk into a public library, here are the baseline of services that we can provide you. And we're going to have enough information knowing about all those other components out in the community to send you or refer you to those agencies. And basically what we've done is taken a portion of our dollars that we receive, actually appropriated by this committee, the Regional Library Basic System Support, and said, because this is a priority, this is where we're going to put some funds. So that's where we'll be providing that baseline, if it's, you know, buying a unique database that all of them have, or providing training, cross-training especially, between workforce center staff and library staff so they know more. So that's really our commitment over the next 3 to 5 years to sort of enhance that service and, again, like I said, provide a baseline level.
And Mr. Olson, do you have any knowledge of how many requirements that people have, like for to apply for unemployment, that kind of thing, that they have to use computer services?
You know, the interesting part is that one of the other things that we've noticed, Representative Murphy, is that there really isn't an evaluation portion or an assessment of what people are coming in and how they're being used. And so our group is sort of forming that in itself. The interesting part is that we've really opened up some good communications with workforce centers and places like Deed and county, cities and counties that are doing this. One of the examples that I think is interesting is that we actually had a staff member from Minneapolis Central Library that decided that she was going to be a secret shopper, and she went into a program that the city of Minneapolis serves to help people find jobs, and sort of just wanted to get the feel of what a customer would encounter if they went into that program, and so that if that same person came to the library, she could describe that. We actually thought that was a great idea until we talked to that workforce center, and they said, well, you know that she sort of gave this description, but that would have meant that she only went into 1/3 of potential programs that we have. So we have this whole other suite of programs that she would have never heard about because of her situation that she described. And we had no clue that that happened. And so, again, that communication that we can provide and just an understanding of what everyone else is doing is hopefully going to help the person who's in need. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of assessment I think we're doing, but we're also recognizing that we don't know all the time.
Same thing that we do, yeah, as we're listening to and how we're talking about the funding of library services. We're finding out so many things we didn't know that's out there or in some place but not another about the funding.
Well, we're really happy about this project, and that's why I wanted to come, not a little, talking about public libraries, but wanting to give you a good story about what's happening in public libraries in Minnesota.
Thank you so much. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Olson, and I know libraries are being asked to do a lot, and I'm concerned with your statistics that a third of all people depend on the library for their internet services. I know that the Department of Human Services is spending a ton of money to try and develop online applications for a whole variety of services, and the assumption is that people have access, and that access I think is undervalued in terms of how much that's going to increase expectations. I have a couple questions. One, to what degree are you really providing state-of-the-art high-tech advice and consultation to your member libraries on internet security? I've been approached actually by one of my constituents about the issue of apparently one other state has enacted laws related to when employers can even ask for information that can be used for identity theft, because they've actually uncovered problems with people suffering identity theft on job applications. Because you think of it, it's got everything. It's got your social security number, your date of birth, might have your driver's license. I mean, and so I think there's some real hesitancy about using public library computers to provide that kind of information, let alone applying for public assistance where you have to list bank accounts and, you know, all kinds of other things. And so I think that's a key backbone. And is that part of what you're providing as a regional support?
Actually,
Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Representative Murphy and Representative Locke. Actually, within MELSA, not really, only because our regional structure really relies on each one of those member library systems to do their own IT work. And so basically those security features on a local level in a public library is going to be handled by the local library. That's not true in all regional public library cases. I think that's a really interesting question that I haven't heard before, and I could see why there would be a concern there. Again, within MELSA, we have, much like we have this jobs and workforce, or small business collaboration, we also have technological teams that work together from each of those libraries to discuss issues. I think that's a perfect example of something I might like to bring up to them, and again, share information among each other. Because I'm not really sure what's happening on the local level, to be honest.
And Madam Chair,
Ms. Loeffler,
the other question I'm wondering is whether MELSA as a regional entity is addressing disparities of opportunity and access within your system and using any of your regional dollars to address that. For example, in my community, up until they closed the library for remodeling, the average wait on a school night for the computer was 2.5 hours for a half hour access, which means you have to type pretty quick if you're doing some things. But and yet, you know, we know there are suburban systems with hundreds of libraries where there's no access issue in terms of wait and time. I can say I wasn't successful in getting those libraries moved to another public building during the interim while it's being remodeled. And so I have people who are applying for jobs now using an internet-connected library or computer at the local park building, which they can't print anything out, and I know the park staff is not trained on keeping security systems up. So with a dramatically higher unemployment rate, particularly around racial and ethnic minorities, I would hope that as a regional system you'd look at what can libraries do uniquely to help that group, which may just be also educationally disadvantaged in terms of even understanding how to use computers.
Sure. Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Olson.
Representative Murphy. We are doing a number of things in that category. Interestingly, if you look at what workforce centers are doing and comparing that to libraries, the number of computers and even the level of technology, one of the things that both of us are understanding is that libraries are even further advanced than the workforce centers. And so another story that we heard was, you know, people working on their resume and using, Windows 97 at the Workforce Center and then being sent over to the public library after the Workforce Center was closed, and we had Windows 2000. And so that the information that they had been working at the Workforce Center couldn't be even used in the public library just because we weren't talking together and didn't have those same operating systems. So we're looking at that kind of communication to try to solve those problems. Within MELSA, what we do for a level of disparity between libraries is that we, again, use about $500,000 of our appropriation from our LPSS to give back to our local libraries so that they can use that for any kind of technology measure that they wanted. Many of them use that to upgrade computers. That's not as much of a use of those dollars as it used to be, because I think both counties and the city of St. Paul have put libraries on a rotating schedule to upgrade their equipment. But if there's a need to upgrade the operating system for the interlibrary loan or the integrated library system, they can use dollars there. But we really leave those dollars, the decision on how those dollars are used, up to the local library, but it needs to be technologically based. But part of the idea there is to raise, again, sort of the baseline so everyone's on an equal footing across the metro area.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Pat Conley. Washington County Director of Libraries.
Former legislative reference librarian when we were very young. Madam Chair, I am Pat Conley, the Director of the Washington County Library. Let me answer just a couple questions that have come up here that I have to respond to. Minnesota takes great pride in being one of the first states to require anyone applying for insurance to do it electronically. So you no longer are allowed to put in paper applications. So it's a point of great pride, but if you are unemployed, can no longer afford your high-speed connection at home, and maybe don't have a state-of-the-art computer, you must find a public or a friend's computer to use. With regard to, Madam Chair, to Representative Loeffler's question, in Washington County, and I believe it is true elsewhere, I want to assure people that who might apply for unemployment insurance or other information where they might be giving private data, we use a system called Deep Freeze. And what that means is as you log off the computer, everything's wiped out. So if you're on the computer for 50 minutes and you log off, it's wiped out. And all the information is wiped out. I've had to explain that to many a law enforcement official. So I just want to assure you and to the people who might be listening that their information is immediately, at least in Washington County, and I believe most metro libraries, and I'm sure statewide, there are systems to get rid of that. So with regard to this report, and I am going to speak to the legislative auditor's report, I am not speaking today, by the way, as a Washington County employee, nor am I speaking as a member of the Minnesota Library Association. I'm speaking probably as a former nonpartisan staff member of the legislature. So on the positive side, I think the one recommendation, and Kit Hadley and I have discussed this, and I believe she's put it in the letter to you, the one recommendation that is overlooked and is very good is to require the state librarian to do a biennial report on the state of the state for public libraries. Public libraries are, let's face it, invisible. Today, what have you heard about? You haven't heard so much about public libraries. No one tells the coordinated story of how much we contribute to the state's economy or its well-being. The return on investment on public libraries, while debatable by statisticians, is tremendous. And if more people knew about our benefits, we'd have more Mary Murphys and members of this, and people like members of this committee who are at the legislature pleading our cause. This recommendation from the report will become even more important in the next few years as we see public library services contracting, and by that I mean diminishing, in the state. Since you sometimes deal with money, I'm going to put a $50,000 to $75,000 price tag on what I think could be done if you were to allow this, give the funding to the state state librarian to do a report. When I lobbied for the counties, many of you knew me in that capacity, we were always complaining about the fact that the state requires us to do all this reporting of data, but they never do anything with it. We annually report all of the information, just public libraries. We report vast reams of information to the state every April. It seems to me that, and then the state has a system where we can go in as we choose and pull that data out and compare it to other things. But nobody does that for you, and certainly nobody does that for the public library, for the public community, the public at large. So I think the finest recommendation in the legislative auditor's report is that an annual, biannual report, I think they call it. My criticisms, if I may. I tire of this use of per capita as a way to judge the efficacy of a library or the commitment of a local funding source to library services. Of course, a city is going to have a higher per capita expenditure than a county. There are fewer people in the city. The county has more people. Let me use our own Stillwater Library, one of the finest libraries in the state. For your information, Washington County has 9 county public libraries, and we have an association agreement with Stillwater and Bayport. They are separate city libraries. Separate levying authority, separate library. And I can use Stillwater because we have such a superb relationship with them. If you were to look at their 2009 annual report to the state, you would see that they spent over $74 per capita to maintain the library. There's 18,000 people living in Stillwater. But if you were to look at Washington, and their budget is about $1 million. If you were to look at Washington County, you would see that we spend about $30, just over $30 per capita. But our budget at that point was $6.8 million. No more, but it was at that point. So our per capita looks small, but we were supporting 9 libraries. We are open more hours. Per capita really isn't a measure of anything. If you had an annual report, you could take that per capita number and say, how many kids went to programs? How many books were circulated? How many hours of computer time are we buying? You need, as it's kind of the same in the healthcare debate, you need data in order to make a wise decision about the expenditure of your money. And while it is there, it's collected. You just don't see it. I think the recommendation on multi-types is a red herring. And I don't know where it came from or how it came up, but multi-types are not public libraries, and that's the topic here, public libraries. Regional public libraries, certainly I believe many of them believe they can take on this money. It's $1 million in your budget. I think it was, and I'm not sure. I defer to staff on this, but it's about $1 million. Mission creep. Let me echo what Representative Loeffler has stated here. Transferring $1 million to 12 regional library systems is frankly pretty measly. Rather, a strong state library division should be able to handle the educational functions and communications functions among all types of libraries. They might still maintain offices, but as Representative Loeffler has pointed out, it can be handled, especially in this day of modern telecommunications and electronic communications. It can be handled at the state level. Now, regarding delivery, and that's something to look at, a strong state library, or more likely, a strong state library through Minitex, if given funding, could meld these statewide delivery systems. I'm just throwing that out. I don't have a complete answer to that one. But my summary, transfer multi-type duties to the state library and give them the $1 million to transfer to contract with Minitex or others to provide services. Another point, we need a stronger state library division. I think I'm sitting in a room where there will someday be a commissioner of education, no matter who is elected governor. This is a very, very experienced committee. So I will know that the state and cares about libraries when that position is an assistant commissioner position. And then you can start giving them funding to revise the very, very outdated rules and the outdated state standards. Wisconsin has a much better system of public library state standards. Ours are old. They haven't been revised, and it has something to do with the politics of the education department, which you all know better than I, and whether or not they're allowed to do rules. So I leave that thought in your minds. Finally, the state in the report says on page 67 that, quote, overall, the current regional public library system is working well. Well, that's highly debatable. And maybe what I'm talking about is the public library system in the federated systems, where we all have our different library governance systems. I think it's time, quite right time, for some significant reorganization and more funding from the state. First thing to tackle is the archaic governance structure that mirrors the old days of public welfare boards. And I know Commissioner, Representative Loeffler and Representative Murphy remember the days when all throughout the state we had public welfare boards. And they made decisions about public welfare, but they didn't fund it. It was generally funded at that time by the counties. That's the situation we face today. It's an old-fashioned way of governing public libraries, and it insulates the libraries from their key funders. In the olden days, that may have felt nice, but today it just gives the elected officials an excuse to discount the library as a critical service. I won't go on. I could, but I won't go on. So the summary there, when one of you becomes Commissioner of Education, please appoint the state librarian as an assistant commissioner of education. Now, I'll just say one more thing, even though it's not your committee. MLA, and thanks to Ken Berenger, the librarians are probably having a heart attack, huh?
We understand you're speaking as an individual, Ms.
MLA. But MLA has really led the charge in trying to come to some solution on this maintenance of effort issue. And I have to do my spiel here about maintenance of effort, because I think you're going to face it more and more from your local elected officials as you go along. And it does need to be some assurance of funding for public libraries. We don't compete. We just don't compete at the same level as other departments. But what happens with a maintenance of effort, the kind that you have in this area, is that rather than ensuring a floor below which the local electeds can't go lower, you create a ceiling above which local electeds don't go above. And what does that do? Because they're afraid if they give us more money for a pilot project, they'll have to be held to it. Now, we've worked on that, and thanks to the state library director, thanks to MLA, we're coming to some conclusion. But historically, it has been a disincentive for innovation. Just think about that as you go along. I do not see the maintenance of effort going away, but I think you want to enable creativity, enable innovation. And this committee has certainly done that in some of the funding you've given us in other areas. So those are my thoughts, Madam Chair. Now I have to go sit with the librarians. They're my friends. Yeah.
Ms. Conley, independent, not speaking for any organization
correct.
Or library system
that
or board.
Correct. Thank you, Madam
former employee of nonpartisan research.
Yes, actually not of House Research, but of the Legislative Library.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Conley. I just want to say thanks for being willing to think outside the box and challenge your peers to do that as well, because the early testimony is we love everything we have right now, and you know, change is hard anywhere, but we're all facing dwindling resources. Yeah. And to say we all love what we have right now and not acknowledge the fact that collection budgets are dwindling. We heard about how the schools are not able to sustain the kind of basic infrastructure that we all cherished at one point in our lives. You know, it says things are changing whether we change or not. And, you know, you can do a depth of 1,000 cuts that aren't planned and thoughtful, or you can try and be strategic and say, what do we really need to preserve? How can we bring people together to make that happen even better? You know, the example that was brought forward of the discount purchasing, the state has realized significant savings by doing state purchasing across all of its agencies, which have very different functions and purposes. And it seems to me like even with libraries, where there's very similar acquisitions, doing that on a statewide basis might make a lot more sense than each region trying to cut its best deal with the publishers or the computer manufacturers or whoever they're dealing with. So I think we need to look outside that, because we really do cherish libraries and librarians and the resources that they make available in every one of our communities, because they're all dwindling at a time of increased demand, whether it's for job hunting or for people who are trying to accept the fact that they're never going to be able to be the Barnes & Noble buyer they once were, and they're bringing their kids into the library instead of going off to purchase a book. And so I think we really do need to look at some other options. So thanks for having the courage to do that.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Ms. Conley. Independent. Not representing any group. Ms. Finsness? Excuse me, before you start, please sit down. There is in our packet a written testimony from Christy Tornquist, who wanted to be here today but was not able to. And Dr. Christy Tornquist is the Dean of Learning Resources and Technology Services from St. Cloud University. And I would like to note that her testimony is in our packets also. Thank you, Ms. Finsness.
Thank you very much.
You are the Director of State Library Services Advisory Committee.
Yes, and I did speak to you in April about the position paper that the council has, and I'm not going to reiterate that, but what I would like to do is to take a few moments to answer some of the other questions that were brought up that a little bit more completely, and also to put everything into perspective today. I also would like to share with you that my day job is at the University of Minnesota as a coordinator for curriculum and assessment, working to provide excellent training for all teachers for the state of Minnesota. Previously to that, I was an assistant professor at Mankato teaching teacher candidates how to be good teachers, as well as library media specialists, and also a director for libraries for the Osseo School District. That position was cut. And I also was a business person and have hired many people. So I have a multiple of perspectives that I feel that I bring to the table when I speak with you today. And one of the things that I know is that each and every one of you are here because you're critical thinkers. You grew up in whatever your educational system was, with your mind wanting to seek answers and not believing what you see in print necessarily. And at that time, when we were all in school, everything pretty much was in print. But things are not like that anymore. And one of the things that Representative Murphy started out today was, you used the term great expectations. And I know, as citizens of Minnesota, that we have great expectations for all of our citizens from birth to dust. And so that starts in our school libraries. It starts in our public, first of all, I have to say, the word public libraries to me is a misnomer. Because all of the libraries that we've talked about today are public. They all use public funds. So one of the things that the OLA I mean, they're funds that come from our taxes. They're, you know, we all support all of the libraries, from school libraries to regional libraries, community libraries, the multi-types. So the OLA report gives us a perfect opportunity to rethink the way we're doing business, how we are creating and supporting great expectations for all of our citizens, no matter where they live. So that, to me, is the best thing about the OLA report, is that it brings us here to the table. Now, the State Library Advisory is made up of representatives from all of your constituencies. There are a few vacancies, as I mentioned before, but they represent all of the constituencies and all of the library types that we have in Minnesota. So that's a perfect collaborative place for everyone to work together and to tackle this with the state librarian, the State Library Services. And you know, Ms. Connolly, I have not met you before, but I was so glad that you, everything that you said to me, everything that he said, is speaking of a need for change, a need for collaboration, and to creating a new vision. And so that's my main point that I wanted to say today. But I also just wanted to address a few of the questions that came up that that I may know the answer to. And it's Representative Udall. Erdahl. I'm sorry. Excuse me. For my PhD dissertation, I interviewed a lot of teachers, language arts teachers and history teachers, and it is true that we do have state standards that ask, especially now they're placed in social studies, to help our students be analytical thinkers, but it was baseline data, so I'm not going to swear on it, every single teacher said they relied on their library media specialist to collaborate with them and to teach the students their information literacy standards, because they do not receive that training, that professional development to do it, and media specialists do. So the standards are in our state academic standards, and it needs to be, because information is changing so much, and be able to determine whether something's real or not. That's the job in a school of a library media specialist or a regional librarian, or through the services that are provided through our multi-types. Our teachers, which my job right now is to helpfully change that, but our teachers at this point are not receiving the training necessarily that they need. So our students are not coming to us with the training they need to have to be research and critical thinkers. The other thing that there was a question also about the voice within a school district. Because school districts don't have media specialists, they don't have coordinators, they don't have anyone at the district level, for the most part, to be their voice. And that is one of the reasons for the decline in school libraries. So that was an answer to another question. And also, Representative Loeffler, the media thing that came to me when your community library was shut down for remodeling is that there was a time when I worked as a Minneapolis media specialist that we discussed the idea of opening up our school computer centers for the public after hours, if they could be staffed, because in all of our districts there are computer labs funded by public dollars for the most part, but a lot of PTAs, I'll tell you that, because they don't get enough funding, but they could be open and utilized as well. So those were just some of the responses and questions that were put out there earlier that I thought that I could share with you. So in summary, I just feel that we have a lot of good ideas at the table. We have people that are really interested in forming a good library community. We have great expectations. Collaboration, there may be consolidation, there may be a better way to have services delivered. I hope that as you move forward, and I have confidence that you will, that you continue to seek the experts and the users in our state to move this OLA report forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your the position paper on the report and for your advice to this committee. We really appreciate it. Is there anyone else that came to testify on from the public or has the urge? Okay. Ms. Walton. Ms. Nancy Walton is the Acting Director of State Library Services with the Department of Education. Since April 19th, she was not the acting director because Suzanne Miller was, but Suzanne Miller resigned and is off to New Horizons, and there is a vacancy in the position, and I think in the April meeting or another meeting, we also talked about library services at the School for the Blind, and so bring us up to date on everything that we need to know, Ms. Walton. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I'm Nancy Walton, and some of you know me from the other hat that I wear, where I am a state library program specialist. So I'm the maintenance of effort lady. I also take care of basic support, regional library telecom aid, the federal E-rate telecommunications discount program, and a number of other hats. But it's very exciting to come before the committee today as acting director of state library services and acting state librarian. I've been with the department since 1994. The initial 4 years was as director of the Braille and Talking Book Library in Faribault, and I stepped into this position, the initial part of my position, in November of 98. In looking over the legislative auditor's report, there are many good elements in it. There's a lot of data that is very valuable. It's the data is based upon data that we provided. It's always useful to have a fresh perspective. Pat Connolly was talking about the need for reporting, is that we do an annual statistical analysis, which is available on the website for the department. But that next stage of putting text to data analysis is the piece that's missing and will be very important in the recommendation for a biennial report. In looking over the four recommendations that were in the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report, I'm going to go through them one by one, and if you would like, I would go ahead and do a little bit in terms of the staffing for the piece that involves the Roseville situation. On the first recommendation of collapsing down the structure and moving the function and the funding for the multi-type systems into the regional public library system process and coming up with a new model. The philosophy that I operate under is first do no harm. And the report, by nature of its focus on public libraries, does not really cover the complexity of how library services are provided by all types of libraries and the interrelationships that exist, sometimes through a handshake, sometimes through interagency agreements, sometimes through joint powers agreements or contracts, but many times it's through that collaborative partnership that comes from a group of peers that are dedicated to providing information to Minnesotans from cradle to grave. So in looking at the first recommendation of collapsing down the structure, anything that we would lead as the state library agency and as part of the Department of Education would involve discussion, study, and are there other models that are out there? How can we continue the elements that are valued by the people that are served by the multi-types, especially when funding is a core issue? The multi-types receive $1.3 million. Right now there are 7 systems that are multi-type systems. In the regional systems, there are 12. That means, how do you break down that funding? Is it everybody gets 1/12? I mean, we have to really think about it. But I think it's part of a greater conversation that we as a library community in its broadest sense need to have about what are the baseline services that Minnesotans should expect and how can we provide them in the most efficient manner. And there is a lot of experimentation that has already undergone across the state looking at sharing services. We already pay for statewide delivery. We have an interagency agreement with our partners at Minitex that enables materials to be moved easily from one node library to another across the state. We're piggybacking on the academic delivery system in order to provide services to public libraries and school media centers. The same is with the issue of the Electronic Library of Minnesota. Minitex, through its budgeting, pays for the academic side. We do an interagency agreement with Minitex to negotiate the $900,000 that are for access to databases for people that are in schools and public libraries, and also so our library users can access those resources from home or from work. So the collaboration is there. We don't want to damage the collaboration. We want to ensure that any model that we move forward on helps strengthen and doesn't undermine the others. So, and that is a personal commitment on my part. The second recommendation was that the state library agency or state library services should work more closely with the regional public library systems. And I must admit, I was really offended at that recommendation because I receive hundreds of emails and phone calls every week that come from the systems and their members and from the communities they serve with questions about, you know, data privacy or identity theft, or how do I resolve this problem, or can I bounce ideas against you as a neutral party? So we will continue to build that collaborative partnership within the resources of staffing that we have. It's sometimes it's what gets me up in the morning, is knowing that I have those contacts, because when you start in the library field, what gets you going is your contact with your public. Well, my public is the library community. Occasionally I'll hear from an individual, but that's my public. Item number three, the biennial report on state of the state. It builds on some of the reporting that we already have. It's been on our wish list. We're delighted to see it as a recommendation. It's the issue becomes, can we squeeze out the funding in order to be able to do it? But that's an issue that we will have to deal with, but we're very much in favor of that. The State Library Agency, through the Department of Education, before I came on board in 94, was doing annual or biennial reports through the department's the agency's publication, Minnesota Libraries, but it's been many years since a report was done. We do an annual report on the spending of federal funds, and it's a report that we do to the Institute of Museum and Library Services. And then the fourth recommendation on the process to verify local government spending. This is one of my personal projects because I deal with the data that gets reported to us. Now, there's many ways that data gets reported. First, we have the annual report, which is a statutory requirement. And the data that we get from the public libraries, in turn, is reported to the federal government, and they use it for their national analysis of libraries, how they're funded, what resources are provided, and the activities. But also, because I'm the MOE lady, and I've been called that, and other things relating to MOE, some people not very happily, is that the regional public library systems on July 1st of each year report to the state library the amount of funding that was provided 2 years previously for operating expenses. And those numbers become part of the calculation for the state certified level of library support or maintenance of effort. But it is also a verification that the members of the library are members in good standing of their regional system and therefore qualify for support through the regional library basic system support. So those are intermeshed. One of my concerns has been is that the numbers that are sometimes reported in the annual report are different from the numbers that get reported to us in the annual application, and then there are differences between the numbers, those two number sets, and what gets reported in the annual audit that is submitted to the state auditor. So I have started to gather data to see where the inconsistencies are. Is it problems with definition for the three different types of reporting? Do we need to provide better training on how to do this type of reporting? And I would not like to think that our people in cities or counties under-reporting because of the issue of maintenance of effort. That has sometimes been offered as a concern. I would like to think that that's not it at all. I would rather think that it's timing, what time of the year the data is gathered, definitions, and the issue of training. So all four of those elements that are in the report are priorities for me, not only as acting state librarian, but also in my role as part of the state library services team in the Department of Education. Are there any questions that you might have relating to what I've just said?
Hearing none.
Thank you.
Ms. Walton, is anyone else from the department going to talk today?
No, I am the spokesperson for the day.
Okay. Ms. Conley, who wasn't representing anyone or any group or Washington County, said that within the Department of Education, or the state librarian should have the same authority as an assistant commissioner. Would that work any better? In your opinion? In your experience?
Well, in some states, the state librarian has that a comparable position. There are some states where the state librarian reports to the governor. There are 50 different models for the 50 different states as to where the state library agency is placed. Sometimes we report to the Secretary of State. In many states, we are part of the Department of Education. We have to weigh all the factors, and as with my model, first do no harm, is that we have been within the Department of Education for almost 100 years. Our agency was founded in 1899, so we predate the Department of Education. So there's a long-term relationship there. But there's been discussion as to other models. But as far as for the state librarian, I know that some of the occupants of the state librarian's position would like very much to be a comparable position. It would, for the library community, it would raise the visibility of the library community. But it's a decision for both the governor and the legislature and the Department of Education to make.
Mm-hmm. You've been here since 1994.
Yes.
Has there ever been any, historically, I don't mean for you to be tattling. I'm not asking that. I'm asking, has there been discussions within the department, the various structures? You've had several commissioners between that time and this time. Has there been discussions in any of those administrations about where the state librarian's place in the hierarchy should be?
Well, I know that it was a discussion between the library community and the commissioner and the deputy commissioner back in 2002 when the state library agency went down to three people in Roseville and the library was closed. That was the collection for the library community and also for the education community. So there were many passionate discussions on, you know, what direction do we go? There was an agreement reached that the library community would work with the department on the issue of the state library agency, and we have been slowly rebuilt over time to where we are now. As with public libraries and all types of libraries, there is more demand for services than we have staff, but it's an issue for the state government as a whole.
I'm just getting my arms around all the agencies and the legislative committees that are affected, or that the library system is affected by, and just trying to seek some solution to improve the situation for everybody, no matter where it is or within the agencies that it is, and to try to see how we could improve the funding on a statewide basis. So we have to keep thinking and talking and trading ideas, I guess. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions? About, and then once again about updating us on the vacancies.
Okay. Of course, one of the key vacancies is the position of the state librarian. The department appointed me on June 17th to serve as acting director and acting state librarian. We are very grateful for that because there are decisions that need to be made, and it's wonderful to, you know, have someone responsible for it, even though there are days that sometimes are very long for me. I'm glad to do it because of the importance of what I do and what the state librarian does. We have an additional vacancy in our team. Is the our secretary retired after 35 years in April, just before Suzanne went off to join the Foreign Service. So those two vacancies are on the list for the department of positions to be filled. We are waiting for approval. In the interim, I have worked on updating the position descriptions, especially for the secretarial position, because there are many upgrades that we need of services from that clerical support position that reflect the dependence on technology. So, and that will help all of us because of many of the data entry issues that we absorb, we will be able to give to the administrative support. for the state librarian position, once we receive approval, it will be a national search. And my goal is to have the voices of the library community involved in the interviewing process within the structure of how the department fills key positions. It's going to take some time because you always have to figure in advertising, national search, interviews, reference checks, and then a person giving their resignation and having the time to come. The sooner it happens, the happier I'll be, but in the interim, I'm picking up the slack. My position runs through December 16th, and then it will be renewed. I've been, the deputy commissioner said that I will be renewed in the position if they're happy, until that the librarian actually comes in and occupies the office. We're very excited at the opportunity to bring in a fresh voice and perspective. This will be my fourth state librarian in 16 years, and each one has brought something different to the state, and it will be interesting to see how this all develops. Do you want for me to talk about the Braille and Talking Book Library?
Please.
At this time as well? Okay. The Braille and Talking Book Library, we're actually very excited because we had two temporary employees that we received approval to fill in the customer service and the clerical support area, and those positions finished, of course, at the end of the fiscal year. One of the individuals applied for and received permanent position as a customer service specialist, and so she is in that position and working very hard on behalf of the almost 10,000 individuals who use the Braille and Talking Book Library collection. We also have a second position, and it's been on my wish list since 1994, so I'm going, woohoo, is that the temporary position became a permanent position, and it has been upgraded to a librarian position. How services are provided at the Braille and Talking Book Library are changing. The services themselves are changing, and the method for providing the services. The National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped has finally decided and moved forward and is implementing making the library materials available in a digital format. So instead of 16 cassettes in those little green boxes, the book comes on a flash drive and is plugged into a special digital player. And we have over 80 customers at the Library for the Blind who are over the age of 100, and a number of them are using the digital players. So we're very excited about that. Well, as part of the shift in service is that we're no longer going to have rows and rows of those green cassette cases, and over time those would be phased out. And instead, we will have rows and rows of little boxes with flash drives in them. And at the same time, people can also download books on their own home computer if they have the proper software and they're eligible for the service. So now we're getting the request for reader's advisory and reference questions. And so we're needing to build up that aspect of how we deliver services. And this was an opportunity to have someone come on board, first to be able to do reader's advisory and direct service to the customer, but this position in particular is very important for the librarian who's the director there, because this person will take over the responsibility for the technical support for the automation system, upgrade the website, and then we will explore reactivating the recording program that we used to do. And that's one of my personal I used to love the recording program, especially because I was one of the listeners, and I would actually edit the tapes to make sure that they were complete and accurate. And our goal is to reactivate that program after we invest in upgrading the recording studio to allow for digital recording. And that person will be involved with that process. So this is very exciting for me personally and also for the community that we serve. It's so wonderful to be able to see growth occur in a world where so many things are in retrenchment. And we're absolutely delighted. So that the there were 11 applicants, 10 people qualified. 5 people were invited to apply. 4 people actually came for interviews, 2 from within Minnesota and 2 from outstate. And the interviews were completed a week ago, and they're in the process of checking references and doing a background check. Now, in the Braille and Talking Book Library, it's very important to do a background check because you are working with the children from the Academy for the Blind as well. And that's a vulnerable population, so we want to make sure that our staff that works directly with the children as they come in to visit the library, because we are also the school media center for the Academy for the Blind, that those children are not at risk. So we hope to have a decision soon, and we hope that the individual chosen will accept the offer and that we can move ahead. So these are exciting times for me personally.
And for us, Ms. Lawton, very good news.
Yes.
We appreciate it very much. And, so at the Braille and Talking Book School or Library, will they be at full complement then?
Well, we are, with the position being added, we will be at 9.5 individuals at the library. We do have some retirements coming up. But we don't know when those will occur, and of course we'll have to respond to the retirements. And also related to the retirements is that both of them are in the clerical support area, and so at that point we have to assess what level do we need to keep in the clerical support area to keep the product going out the door, because there's a lot of physical labor involved with that. We still only have a limited number of the book in the digital format, as against, you know, many movable stacks area full of the green cassettes and also the books in Braille. We would move ahead to fill those positions. They might not necessarily be clerical support. We don't know at this time. We'd have to assess it as to who takes the opportunity to take the early retirement.
9.5.
At 9.5. The 0.5 position is a maintenance worker, and we share that individual with the Academy for the Blind.
And so then we'll be able to, with full, when we're have everybody on board, then we'll be able to work up toward that 70,000 potential users.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From where we're at.
When I first came on board in 94, the potential was for 62,000. Now it's 70,000. And what will it be in another 10 years? It's interesting to see the numbers increase. People don't realize that the Braille and Talking Book Library isn't just for people with visual impairment. It's also for people with reading disabilities, people who are allergic to paper and ink, or who have arthritis. Sometimes we have temporary users because somebody's been in an accident and they're in casts and they can't hold on to a book. So it's sometimes a bit intimidating to think what our potential market could be, but it is an exciting challenge. It reflects the changes in our demographics as well.
That's good news, Ms. Walton. Please extend to Commissioner Cleansing and Commissioner Segrin our thanks.
Would you please
express to them that the committee members were smiling when you gave your report? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I understand that in the audience someone is from the cities is here, and someone from the counties is here, and you're not prepared to make big speeches or anything, but you're willing to answer a couple questions. Ms. O'Rourke? Or O'Rourke? That's right. Mr. Johnson? No? Just.
Madam Chair, I believe it's just me. I'm Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. I was sitting next to Joe Matthews, who's the county representative, and he had to leave early.
Ah, I should have noticed that one at the time then. Okay, thank you. And you're from the League of Cities?
That's correct, Madam Chair. The League, for those of you who may not know, is a statewide organization. We represent all 853 cities, as opposed to some of the smaller subset groups you are probably also familiar with.
Yep. I wish Mr. Matthews hadn't had to leave. I just wanted to address the. It came up with Ms. Walton, and it came up with Ms. Conley about, and it's not the purview of this committee, but the maintenance of effort stuff. And in my communications with our local communities and with people, they say, well, if only we didn't have to give so much money to libraries. And that's not the proper thing for somebody to say to me. In fact, it's really not very smart at all to say that to me, because it's like the word giving, for one thing. And the other thing is that in all the things with Representative Lanning's legislation, where everyone was going to be called to talk about the maintenance of effort, it was only the libraries that were had to give in on it. And and now they're talking again that libraries, when more and more people are using than ever before. And that's a good thing. And in your discussions with the libraries, because many of the, I think, are city libraries in the state, what are the issues that they bring to the League of City discussions about funding? Can you help me with that?
Madam Chair, I'd be glad to help with that question, both here and post this committee today. You know, you bring up a lot of very interesting points. We bring in city officials throughout the interim to work on our own policies. And it's not always just funding issues, or to step back from that. It's, you know, city residents using libraries versus township. And we have policy positions just dealing with the equity and services as well. And it's something, it's probably easier to say this without the county sitting next to me. It's something we struggle with on a variety of issues, not just library services. I'll be honest with you, the maintenance of effort issue is something that's been sort of on that mandate list, and the legislature was good to give us some relief from that. I think the current statute helps us out in, as LGA and other funding is cut, we are able to address those in the formula. I'm looking at Elaine right now, but that helps a lot. And to be honest with you, our city managers and officials are very cognizant of the fact when you allow for adjustments in that MOE formula, if the counties are left off the hook, cities are often the ones picking up, or the pressure is there for cities to pick up that extra funding, and vice versa. So I think we're both very cognizant of the fact that that's a delicate situation. And as you know, the last 2 years have been pretty difficult for local governments, and we're very we know that the next couple of years are going to be really hard on us probably as well, with possible cuts in the various aid programs. I don't know if that answers the question entirely, but and to sum up, our cities, and not just for libraries, but in other service areas as well, are concerned about still providing a quality service, realizing that library use is an important part of folks' job searches in a lot of cases, and you've heard testimony to that today, and just how those services and those hours are still provided.
Okay. With your background from the discussions, does it sound like that limiting hours is the most usual way of cutting back?
To be honest, Madam Chair, I guess for purposes of today, I'm not probably really equipped to answer that question. I'd be glad to do a little survey work amongst our members.
Well, when we get our committee discussion, too, we might find the answer to that question from our research or discussions with the local librarians. But do you have any... Ms. Conley said that the per capita, comparing a library system with another library system on a per capita basis, or probably wasn't, she was suggesting that maybe that isn't the best use of, or best comparison to make. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I did catch that when she made that comment, and I thought that was an interesting point. I grew up as a township kid myself and definitely used city services, and I remember a document that your staff, Pat Dalton, put together, I think, 2 years ago that did a it was very eye-opening in terms of looking across the state and who pays for what and what services or what sort of buildings they have, and I guess I'd encourage you to look into that more as you work towards a solution here.
Thank you, Ms. O'Rourke. We're not done with, and I think you said the modifications that we made on, that the libraries made on maintenance of effort was helpful to the cities. Is that the correct wording?
That's correct.
Okay. But it wasn't helpful to the library services that are provided by the cities. And so we have to continue our quest and our goal of working, but we're going to have to talk about the tax effects in the future, and then some of the other things that you brought up. Whose responsibility? And what about the person that lives in the townships and goes to the city library or the county library system, and somebody from another county comes. But as I stated before, there are other ways that those people, that the people that are using libraries, contribute through the Friends of the Libraries and the library foundations and things like that, too. And maybe if it was direct payments, those vehicles would not be so, they would not be so charitable with those, through those vehicles, if they were doing it in another way. But thank you for your willingness to come.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else in the audience that has the urge to speak? Or comment on anything that's been said? Okay. Committee members. Ms. Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just before I move to the next thing, I did want to tell you that maintenance of effort actually has been dealt with in a variety of other committees. It wasn't just libraries, because I know I've been involved in wading into the swamp of Health and Human Services, and it's 20-some unequal, unexplainable differences in tax expectations between counties. So it is happening in other committees. It's just being done in different ways, I think. So it's not just libraries where we've actually made progress in wrestling with these issues. They're difficult.
Yeah. And I realize that, and but I don't want to be standing out there alone either. Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to continue talking as long as we have a deficit. But maybe we have to think outside. Was there anything in the legislative auditor's report that your local librarian had particular concerns about or thought was really valuable? Representative Hausman.
They affirmed some of what we have heard today. I checked with both St. Paul and Ramsey County, and one of them was the recommendation most valuable from our perspective may be the most overlooked, the requirement that the state librarian do a biennial report on the state of the state for public libraries. That was mentioned by Ms. Conley from Washington County. And she elaborated, this is the St. Paul, no one tells the coordinated story of how much public libraries contribute to the state's economy and to important objectives like all kids ready for kindergarten, student achievement, workforce skill building, and access to ultra high-speed broadband. And Mr. Olson gave you a little bit of that workforce issue, but I can just give you the comparison in St. Paul as an example. From the state's perspective, the infrastructure to support job search and workforce skill building are the workforce centers. But the reality in St. Paul has one workforce center, 22 public access computers. St. Paul Public Library has 365. That workforce center is open 42.5 hours, but the cumulative in terms of the St. Paul Library, 690 hours. And the workforce center is not open evenings and weekends. Libraries are. So it just in terms of the impact, and yet we, legislature, don't necessarily even acknowledge that. Thousands of people use the St. Paul Public Library each day for workforce-related reasons. When the relevant state legislative policy committees fail to see public libraries as part of the workforce infrastructure in the state, we miss opportunities for coordination. In other words, if this were discussed not in your committee, but, for example, in Representative Rukavina's committee, would we do things in different ways? We miss opportunities for coordination that significantly improve support for job seekers. And as you heard from Mr. Olson, the Metro Public Libraries are working on some of that. But her point is the return on investment of public libraries is tremendous. A biennial report could focus on the health of public libraries and their role in addressing important state policy. That issue, I think, comes up again in both the City of St. Paul and the Ramsey County observation of the state library. When they talk about that merging of multi-types, and in a sense, as you hear from them, what they're really saying is it's a mismatch between what we say is the mission at any given level and the funding. So the real issue in the case of merging multi-types and regional library systems is the substantial mismatch between mission and funding. Merging with regional libraries will not address this issue. If Minnesota had a strong state library, then a policy debate might be in order about the state library assuming the education and communication roles, but many would disagree how that might happen. But in any case, she observes, we don't have a strong state library system. In the case of one of the observations, they wished that the report had identified how politicized and weak the state librarian office is at the moment. And here's the challenge. Libraries need to undergo tremendous change over this next decade. We need a powerful voice promoting collaboration, identifying statewide issues, and rewarding innovation. Other states have strong offices that we could emulate. And then the hope that there could be a statewide discussion of collections planning, facilities siting, digitization, technology implementation, and purchasing. What I hear in these is the wish for leadership, not a technician generating reports or responding to email requests or whatever, but a strong leadership voice in, as Representative Loeffler has reminded us, in what we know is going to be a changing time. Because I think both make the observation, when they talk about the challenges, each mentions declining funding, and they're realists. They know that in 2011, the legislature will address the budget deficit. They know that will affect local governments, and they know, as a result, that will remake the community facility landscape, including public libraries. And they observe, in 2010, we already reduced our hours and collection budgets and laid off staff. And there is no sense that that is going to change. So the challenges that that they face at the city and county, I think, were comparable. Declining funding, the digital revolution, changing demographics, growth in traditional services, such as circulation of materials, but at the same time, declines in collection spending and staff, double and triple digit growth in demand for computing, transitioning collections to digital formats, and changing nature of the service population. Very similar kinds of themes, I think, at the city and the county level. So, and I think they were in some ways raised by people speaking today. You didn't want us to speak today to the third question that you asked, which was, did our libraries receive any funding and how the money was spent. I've given copies of both city and county reports to your committee administrator because I think the statistics are worth sharing with the entire committee when you get to that point. So I think there's more, but I think it gives some sense of response.
That's
from
good.
Our libraries.
Good points. Anyone else? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard back from the Dakota County folks, library folks. Mr. Berenger is here if he wants to. I'll summarize some of his responses, and if he wants to elaborate, he certainly could come up to do that. He agreed, as we've heard from several people now, that the biennial report to the legislature would be a good suggestion. He thinks that that would help to provide some greater leadership on library issues, although he commented on the multi-type, the recommendation on the multi-type systems. He says, while there may be reasons to consider that consolidation, the latter group does serve many, many different types of libraries, as we've heard from others testifying today, and hopes that folks who are members of the multi-types would be involved in the conversation of any kinds of changes to their services. He also echoed the concerns that others have expressed today that the economic downturn has brought a significant influx of new business into libraries and has stressed their resources in ways that are unusual, and particularly when you combine it with the decline in state revenues and decline in funding for cities and county program aid and the impact that has on providing those services to an increasingly needy population. So those were the major comments that I heard back from the Dakota County folks.
Good points. Do you have that in writing to share with us too? Your report?
I have Mr. Berenger's reply to my request. It's not my report, uh-huh. So I don't want to take ownership of that. So,
Mr. Barringer, can he share that in writing with the rest of us?
Sure.
Thank you. And Representative Hausman, you said that you've already.
I'm assuming that that would be that. I mean, this is to be shared with this committee. So
good. Anyone else? Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausman had opportunity to visit with Ms. Nimitz, and she's back here too, but maybe she doesn't want me to speak for her, but I enjoyed talking to her. She's, and we've seen with other people with the libraries today too, that they're quite excited about the work that they do. But I just wanted to throw out a couple additional things that were mentioned, and maybe as a committee we might want to look at. Ms. Nimitz mentioned something about Southeast Minnesota and some catalog things that they do down there, and Representative Davids isn't here today, but it's something that maybe we should look at, and it sounds like it might be successful down there. But one of the things that I'm just going to kind of throw out some different thoughts, but it's amazing how each city is different, and Ms. Nimitz mentioned, like, and it came up today about the cuts in my school district, North St. Paul, Maplewood, and Oakdale, from one of the testifiers. But you know, St. Paul school districts don't, I don't think they have any librarians, and then the parents are actually running some of the libraries and doing that sort of thing. So each Roseville school district is still has librarians and are able to do that and have that, luckily, as a priority. But just in our area, Mounds View, there's been cuts in White Bear Lake. There's been cuts in the school libraries. So it's, you know, it's just kind of interesting to see how each ones are, or different ones are handled, and what goes on. You know, one of the things that Ms. Nimitz mentioned, and it's so true, and if anybody has an opportunity, you know, to go by a library around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you would clearly see how important libraries are in our communities, and with you know, everybody, the needs changing. And she mentioned that the patrons that are coming in the door are much needier, that they're you know, they're job seekers, they need help on the computers, they need help. And then some of the things that Representative Loeffler mentioned, and I think Ramsey County is in a little better position than what you talk about, but they give a little, they've been able to extend some of the computer times in, say, the new Roseville Library, for example, because to do a resume on the computer, I mean, you mentioned a half an hour, and you just can't do that sort of work, of course, in a half hour. I mean, no one can. And then, you know, obviously that's problematic. And then the changing world, which is fascinating to me growing up in the newspaper business, and just to see, you know, Ms. Nimitz mentioned, and it's just, you know, just how the e-book world is changing, the technology is all that, how these are changing. And she mentioned, you know, just the publishing world, of course, will be changing with the these sort of things. But I know you said you don't want to talk about the legacy stuff, but
that's,
I just
right, I said that.
But they're taking our work, they're taking that money very serious, and doing good work, and I hope we do have a chance to hear that at some point.
We will have an opportunity.
I think that's about it. I mean, there's mine thoughts are, I'll try to organize them and submit them to the committee.
Thank you. And I had a meeting with the Cliff Hay Librarian and the City of Duluth Librarian, and I gave them an assignment too, and that is in our packets also, and that was earlier in the month. Representative Loeffler.
Well, Madam Chair, I have to say I didn't even get to your request till the end of the week, and passed it on to the Hennepin County Library Board members and director. And well, I haven't heard back officially from them. We have one of our board members in the audience here who told me that he learned a lot more about this over the weekend than he had ever known about before, and even looked at some of our earlier hearings. So true to form, people who care about libraries know how to access information and ponder it, and I'll be glad to share in the future feedback from them. I think one of the learnings is we just need to have a lot more lead time, at least for those of us who work and juggle other things to get that kind of turnaround. But they'll be thinking about it.
Good, good. And, you know, we are pretty close to the time limit. Also, that was set aside for this committee, and so there is no time limit on additional thought and participation in thinking about the things that people have testified to and the legislative auditor's report. And it's an ongoing work for all of us, and so we will refer to it again. But this was a good block of time that we could devote to the auditor's report. I hate when a lot of study has gone into something and get data gathering, and the report is given to us, and we don't do something with it and acknowledge the work and the recommendations. If any of you that are participants and listeners in the audience and on the internet have ideas of how we can get our arms around the total idea of public libraries serving all Minnesotans and funding public libraries to serve all Minnesotans on the local level, the county level, the state level, through the Education Committee, through the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Committee, through the Tax Committee, through the Local Government Committee, through the Finance Committee. If you have particular ideas or suggestions, we welcome those and we'll discuss them, because this is the auditor's report is the starting point for change for the future. And it might not be done in giant steps, but we have to have more people assuming the responsibility of saying, how are we going to continue to fund our libraries in a better way to serve all Minnesotans? And that's a goal and a mission, and let's go forth and continue to think about it. Ms. Voss, do you have any reactions or anything to say?
Not really, no.
Very good. This meeting is adjourned.